In your face. It is so great to hear your voice, Rodney. We haven't had you on board for a while. There's been so much happening. Let's start with your home state of Tasmania and what's happening with conversion practices legislation there. Where have we landed?
Well, after 10 years of campaigning on the issue almost 20 drafts of legislation, the Tasmanian Greens have released a bill which will now go to 4 weeks consultation. It's a bill that they've worked closely on with Equality Tasmania and me. I think it's pretty strong. It combines the best of legislative recommendations in Tasmania and also the existing laws in Victoria and New South Wales. So I think it's, even though Tasmania's coming late to this reform, I think the legislation we have on the table is some of the best. And my hope is that it will pass Parliament before the end of the year so we can see an end to these cruel and futile practices.
I know it's only early days for this piece of legislation, but what noises is the government making in Tasmania?
Well, the Premier, Jeremy Rockliffe, supports a ban on conversion practices and made that very clear, I think it was 4 years ago now. The Tasmanian Law Reform Institute conducted an inquiry and released a report on the issue 4 years ago, and in the wake of that, he said he supported a ban. There are members of the government, I think, who won't want to vote for the legislation, but the majority, I think, will. And, of course, the Liberals in Tasmania are in a minority government. There's quite a large crossbench, mostly progressive members, and there's Labor as well, and the Greens who have put this forward. And all of them have expressed strong support for a ban on conversion. The issue in Tasmania, the hold-up, compared to other states, hasn't really been an antagonism to a ban. I think there's very strong support in our parliament for banning conversion practices. The issue has been which model we should pursue. The government released a conversion bill in 2023, I think it was, that was really not up to scratch. It would probably have done more to allow conversion practices than prevent them. And that was widely condemned. And since then, we've been working on another bill, which is a bill that was launched this week. And hopefully that'll be the bill that finally does the trick.
Are you happy with the model in the latest bill?
Yes, very. Like I said, we've worked closely with parliamentary drafters on this and with the Greens who have put it forward. And quite a bit of the bill is, you know, from our recommendations. It builds on the recommendations of the Tasmanian Law Reform Institute. I mentioned before that they put out a report recommending reform back in 2022. It draws from Victoria the framework for education and prevention. Victoria certainly leads the nation in that regard, so we've sort of lifted that into our bill so that it won't just be the passage of the legislation. There'll be resources put into ensuring that there are, you know, investigations of alleged conversion practices and that there's education, particularly of faith communities and healthcare providers. And from New South Wales, it takes the exemptions. The New South Wales exemptions are probably the clearest and most straightforward of any state, and they really help prevent, you know, the muddying of the waters by opponents of reform in that state. So we've taken those into our bill. And, as well as the very, like I said, the groundbreaking definitions of conversion practices and the scale of penalties that were proposed by the Law Reform Institute. So all up, it takes the best, I think, from what currently exists in Australia and puts it into one bill.
And it sounds like the political numbers are there in the Parliament this time around for this bill. The numbers are there to enable passage.
You never want to be too cocky about that kind of stuff. Anything can happen in a parliamentary debate, particularly in Tasmania. But on the face of it, yes, it does look like the numbers are there. And I think the numbers have probably been there for several years, at least. The issue has been, like I said, which model do we want? And if people are happy with this model, and I understand from talking to MPs across the political spectrum that they are, then, yes, the numbers will be there to get this passed.
Let's move to the federal parliament. This week, the Greens put forward a bill, introduced a bill to introduce, establish a national LGBTIQA plus commissioner. What can you tell us about that legislation?
Well, that's another reform that I and people I work with, this time in Just Equal Australia, a national LGBTIQA plus lobby and advocacy group. This is something we've been campaigning for a few years now. There's a gap in our federal human rights framework. There are commissioners for sex discrimination and race discrimination. There's an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander social justice commissioner. There's a children's commissioner. There's an age commissioner. There's a human rights commissioner, but there isn't an LGBTIQA plus human rights commissioner. And we've been saying that this is important in order to ensure that there's a focus on our human rights and someone there at a national level to advocate for us with the resources to ensure that they can do that well. And that's currently lacking. Now, of course, we have Anna Cody, who is the Sex Discrimination Commissioner. She does a lot of advocacy on LGBTIQA plus issues, and her advocacy is excellent. But she has to cover sex discrimination, discrimination on the grounds of relationship status and pregnancy and all these other things. So she can't focus on our issues 100%. It's only a part-time portfolio for her. And we're really keen to have that 100% focus. It's something that the Labor Party committed to, I think, back in 2016 as part of their election platform. But we haven't seen any movement from the government from the Albanese government on that issue, despite that commitment 10 years ago now. And so we approached the Greens and said, it's time to move this along. Please introduce legislation. They did. And hopefully there'll be some kind of debate or further examination of that issue when Parliament returns after the winter break. It's clear from our point of view that there needs to be someone who can focus on this. And particularly with rising hate and discrimination against LGBTIQA plus people in Australia. Fingers crossed, the government thinks that it's something that they can act on.
I mean, they have, as you say, dragged their feet on it. Reading the political tea leaves, Rodney, do you think the Albanese government has more stomach for this time around? Do you think they'll finally honour that 2016 commitment and back this? Or will they not, because it's coming from the Greens?
The Albanese government has backed away from some important reforms, particularly amending the Sex Discrimination Act to stop religious schools and services from discriminating against LGBTIQA plus people. It backed away from that reform previously, and it was also a bit iffy on including us in the census. The Prime Minister seemed to oppose that, but then that changed and that was allowed, so that's good, I guess. On this issue, I'm hopeful that the government can see the need for having someone who can advocate on our issues, on a full-time basis. The fact that the Greens have introduced it shouldn't be an issue. I mean, with the conversion practice legislation I mentioned before, even though it's a Greens bill, State Labor in Tasmania supports that reform 100%. It shouldn't be a partisan issue. If the Albanese government wants to enact this reform but doesn't want the Greens bill, then it's more than welcome to introduce its own.
And of course, the coalition this week lobbed a grenade into the parliament, which really showed the need for an LGBTIQA plus commissioner, with their bizarrely entitled Restoring Common Sense and Recognising Biological Sex Bill, which was defeated in the Senate, introduced by Michaela Cash. What are your thoughts on that debacle?
Well, it seems to me that there's, right up to the next election, there'll probably be a battle between the coalition and One Nation over who can be most transphobic, which is very disappointing and will cause deep damage. I would hope that that wouldn't be the case, but unfortunately it looks like it will happen. And this was what the coalition's first shot in that battle, or one of the first shots. I've been working with a number of mainstream women's services, both in Tasmania and nationally, to highlight how damaging these kinds of amendments would be not only for trans and for trans women, but also for women generally. If the kind of definition of sex, biologically based definition that the coalition wants, was actually put into law, that would mean a whole range of women would be potentially disadvantaged. Women who don't conform to the traditional gender stereotypes may find themselves discriminated against. Women who, want to access support or services may have to present or pass particular, tests of present evidence that they're women, biologically based women, women born women. They may have to go through invasive tests, and I mean, there's so many areas where women across the board could be disadvantaged by these kinds of really reductionist definitions. I really thought that our society had moved beyond this. In the past, women were judged according to their biology. Women were denied the vote because it was said that they were somehow biologically ineligible for that, or they were forced into the home and into childbearing because of some kind of biological determinism. Biological determinism has been used against women again and again in Australia and across the world, and it will be again if we have these archaic, retrograde, exclusive, discriminatory, segregationist definitions put into our law. We have to do everything we can to fight this, because it's not just a problem for trans women, as much as it is a problem for them, it's a problem for all women and everyone who believes in equal rights and dignity.
Do you think One Nation will turn around and have a go and introduce a bill that's even worse? Is that what you think this is about?
Yeah.
Kind of a race to the bottom, right?
Yep. I mean, they've already done that. One Nation has been trying for a couple of years now to get these kinds of amendments to the Sex Discrimination Act. And I've got no doubt that they will try something even more repressive and exclusionary in order to try and outbid the coalition in search of the transphobe vote. I don't think that those votes are actually out there. I think this is very much a Parliament House bubble. I don't think most Australians are going to vote according to their views on, or the parliamentary views on, trans rights. But for some reason, One Nation and the Coalition have convinced themselves that this is an important issue. They don't want to look like they're falling behind reform in the UK or MAGA in the US. And so they've decided to, as you said, race to the bottom.
Is that really as well what's going on? I mean, the Coalition and One Nation, Pauline Hanson, they have spent a lot of time going to conservative conferences in the UK, in the US, CPAC, Pauline was at Mar-a-Lago with Gina, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that they're really putting a lot of resources and getting a lot of resources from overseas interests? We've heard that with bot farms pushing, propaganda and stuff like that. It really sounds like they're talking to overseas interests rather than ordinary Australians, which is ironic because that's not their narrative.
Yeah, that's exactly right. What's happening here is that strategists from the US and the UK are telling One Nation, possibly the Coalition, Gina Reinhart or whoever else is involved in this, that attacking trans people is the thing to do because they're a tiny minority who can be demonised easily, that's a really useful distraction from the economic issues that are really worrying Australians. So if you get people to focus on this other culture war issue, then you're distracting them from the things that, are important to them day to day. And you build up this kind of culture war, this moral panic about trans people, as has happened in the US and the UK, and then you step in as the person who's going to fix that moral panic or culture war, the person who's going to win it with your legislation or whatever it might be. It's a classic far right wing moral panic strategy. We've seen it again and again. We saw it on marriage equality in the mid 2000s in Australia and the US. People might remember that George W. Bush wanted to get re-elected in 2004, and there was this huge moral panic about how marriage equality, which had then been passed in several US states, would destroy the world, and that there needed to be a constitutional amendment against it. And off they went. And, of course, in Australia, the same course was taken by John Howard in banning same-sex marriage. There was a culture war or a moral panic stirred up about marriage equality, and then he stepped in as the person who would fix the problem. It's exactly the same dynamic. We've seen it again and again. The reason I cite marriage equality, of course, is because we know that we moved on from that moral panic to actually achieve marriage equality 13 years later. And I'm confident that Australians will also move on from this anti-trans panic. They'll realise that it's nonsense and that we'll see a greater embrace of trans and gender diverse people in Australia in the coming years. It may not be in the next year or two. This may be a very difficult time for all of us, but it will happen. There will be a time when our country embraces trans people.
Do you think the more that Australians get reacquainted with Pauline Hanson, the less they like her? You know, we've already seen her polling going down as a consequence of her monoculture rant.
I'm not sure. I don't want to make predictions about what will happen in the lead up to the election. Anything could happen. The sense I get is that, everyday voters are a bit concerned that, you know, if they're being told that they're being manipulated by these false social media accounts from Southeast Asia or Russia or wherever it is. That may make people a bit more sceptical, which is good. No one likes to feel they're being manipulated. And as for talk of monoculture, I do find amongst the people I speak to that that's something that they scratch their head about and maybe make jokes about. And here I'm not talking about, my friends who may not be particularly keen on One Nation. I'm talking about people who are potential swing voters. Pauline Hanson doesn't seem to be doing herself any favours with some of the stuff that she comes out with. I probably live in the most Anglo state of Australia, Tasmania, but even here, people are really scratching their heads about whether what a monoculture would be and how old-fashioned that seems and how out of step with the fact that there are so many people in our communities who are from different cultures.
Is it out of the ballpark, do you think, that we could have a situation where you have a minority coalition government with supply and confidence from One Nation? Is that an equation that's off the rails heading towards the next election, for the next election?
Oh, it's definitely a possibility. Obviously a frightening one for LGBTIQA plus people and anyone who's a bit different, I guess. But One Nation has shown itself in the past not to be very effective at exercising power and to pull itself apart, to fall apart when faced with the realities of day-to-day government. I'm not sure that a situation that you've just described would necessarily last very long. It sounds pretty unstable.
You mentioned before how this culture war has been going on for basically, over 25 years, three decades, if you like. Are you surprised they keep coming back to the well to try and have another drink?
Well, I've been facing culture war or moral panics on LGBTIQA plus issues since I came out, really. I was involved in the battle to decriminalise homosexuality in Tasmania. And that was beaten up as a huge culture war by then Liberal Party leaders like Robin Gray. And then, of course, there was marriage equality, and now there's a trans exclusion, as well as the religious freedom issue that's disappeared for a moment in Australia, but I'm sure we'll be back sometime soon. So it's disappointing that people keep trying to beat up these culture wars. I'm reassured that when I look at the polling on how Australians actually feel about marriage equality or about their trans people, that there isn't a deep well of prejudice there. There may be some confusion, there may be some misunderstanding, but it's not anything that can't be addressed with reaching out to people, giving them good information, and particularly people who are concerned, telling their stories about the way the prejudice affects them. Just last year, I saw some polling on, you know, whether trans people should have the same rights as other Australians, whether people felt that trans people posed a threat to them, and the results were very reassuring. Australians are very strongly in support of trans equality and inclusion and do not see trans people as a threat. If One Nation or whomever it is wants to stir up prejudice in Australia, they've got a far bigger battle ahead of them than equivalent people in the UK or the US.
We were talking before about the LGBTIQA plus commissioner bill that the Greens have introduced. If Labor, is still wishy-washy on that, but they're thinking about something else that needs to be implemented as a priority that's kind of, you know, easy, that's in line with Labor philosophy, is there any other reform that they also should make?
Well, they're certainly talking about Labor philosophy. There's reforms to the Fair Work Act that are important and overdue in terms of protecting LGBTIQA plus people as effectively as possible. Labor did make some reforms at the beginning of its first term, the first term of the Albanese government, which were welcome. They need to be followed up with some further reforms and certainly fit within Labor's remit of defending workers. And speaking of workers, of course, there's the issue I mentioned before of protecting LGBTIQA plus people in faith-based schools and services. That doesn't only mean students, well, as important as that is, in schools or customers and clients of religious services. It also means the staff in those schools and services. And that's very much within Labor's remit of defending workers again. And it baffles me why Labor doesn't want to approach that reform. Tasmania has protected LGBTIQA plus people in religious schools and services since 1998, protected them from discrimination, I should say. And more recently, Victoria, the ACT, and Queensland to an extent have done the same. And they were all Labor governments that did that. I do not understand why Labor federally can't follow the lead of Labor at a state level and amend the Sex Discrimination Act.
And just quickly, Rodney, you mentioned some further Fair Work reforms. Can you just go into a little bit more detail so that we know specifically what they should do?
Well, one aspect is protecting people with innate variations of sex characteristics. There is some protection in the Fair Work Act, but that definition is quite narrow and it needs to be reformed to ensure that all people with innate variations have the same protections as other workers. So that's one reform that I think is quite urgent there.
Fantastic. Rodney Croom from Just Equal. Always great to hear your voice on 3CR. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No worries. Thanks, James. 3CR.